Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You know it's training camp when Dan Campbell's doing up-downs, baby. Although if you saw the video, he's missing some of the up part. It's about that time. Football all day, every day here on the Lombardi Line. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonatoni with you. A jam-packed 2 hours ahead as all 32 teams around the National Football League are on the practice field getting going. Michael, it feels so good. How are we doing today?
And we got celebrity sightings. Hulk Hogan's out there watching practice, coaching up Dan Campbell. Was he taking him off the top rope? I wonder how many ventes they had this morning, the two of them. So, yeah, it's great. It's good to have it. We got hold-ins. We got hold-outs. We got, you know, guys looking sensational with no pads on. We got guys sitting out of practice because they're a little sore. So, yeah, it's a world of everything, Stormy. I love it.
It's the practice reports and over-analyzation of every throw on the field for me. But for as excited as you and I are about training camp, Michael, I don't know if anyone is more excited than the Chargers' new head coach, Jim Harbaugh. Take a listen to his reaction to getting things underway yesterday.
Just the way it feels, I mean, feels like New Year's Day, you know, feels like being born. Feels like coming out of the womb, you know. It's like you're in there and it's comfortable and it's safe. And now you're out, you're born, the lights are on, it's bright, got chaos, people looking at you, people talking at you. And just feels good to, you know, have it happen.
You know what he didn't mention, though, Michael, is that when you come out the womb, you typically cry. So hopefully no crying out there in Los Angeles. What a reaction from Jim, though. That's amazing.
How do you remember any of that? I don't have the faintest memory of any of this. How does he remember it?
Like, unbelievable.
He's reciting it in detail as if he remembers it. Look, it's exciting. I mean, it is like New Year's Day. It's like, okay, we're going to get started. Here we go. We got our resolutions for the year. Life moves on. And I like the fact that the Chargers are wearing that baby blue all the time now, you know? So his analogies are interesting, obviously better than Deshaun Foster's, what he did yesterday at the Big Ten conference. I felt bad for that poor guy. How they ever let him get on stage like that without any help is beyond me, but life goes on, Stormy. Yeah. I keep asking, like, who's paying attention to some of these things? Like, who's helping these coaches out? You know, Harbaugh's pretty resourceful. He could kind of get into, like, talk about some things. But some guys, I mean, you know, Robert Saleh, Deshaun Foster, not so good.
Yeah, they're football guys. They're not podium guys, right? Although Jim Harbaugh is sure something to behold. And so, while there's all this excitement in Los Angeles, another team in California causing me pain, Michael. So in addition to Brandon Ayuk, who reported to camp Tuesday but is holding in, we have another development in 49ers camp. The left tackle, future Hall of Famer, 11-time Pro Bowler Trent Williams is holding out amid some contract struggles of his own. Mm-hmm. Now, he still does have a handful of years remaining on the contract that he signed with the 49ers in 2021, but he's no longer the highest paid guy. The guarantees have run out. So how much of this for you with Trent Williams holding out is him wanting to be the number one top paid guy, considering he's the best left tackle in the entire National Football League? Or is it just that, hey, I need my guaranteed money. Let's make that happen, San Francisco.
Well, I think it's clearly we've said this all through the offseason. This time, the first couple of weeks of training camp is going to be, where's my money?
Yeah.
You know, and Trent, for you, there's nothing to worry about with Trent Williams, though. I'm sure they're going to do something for him. And there's nothing for you to worry about, because do you really want him out there practicing, taking all these reps at his age? I think you want to kind of nurse him along like they're doing Christian McCaffrey, but they got to make sure he's in shape. So that's a good thing. But look, I think this is what we're dealing with today in this free agent market. No one anticipated, including Joe Shane, that the cap was going to go up as much as it went up, which means the players are going to get more money, and they deserve more money. And guys like Trent Williams, who are good players, and they don't have guarantees left on future years, which they're going to be a part of, why not guarantee it? It's what Matthew Stafford was complaining about, and the Rams ended up doing that. So I think it's the right play, you know, and I think they can handle it. So he's there. He understands it. He doesn't need to take reps. The Ayuk one is different because, you know, where are we going with that? You know, I think to me, he keeps turning down offers. you know, Trent Williams hasn't turned down an offer. He wants an offer.
And to your point, too, about him not practicing, it's who wants, especially with a big guy like that, to have a soft tissue injury or anything like that happen in the preseason. So I agree with you from that standpoint. For me, just as a fan and as somebody who wants to see the San Francisco 49ers go the distance, this is such an important season for them in the final year of Brock Purdy's rookie contract. I just don't like all the distractions right now. This team, from a depth perspective, the amount of talent that they're going to have out there on the field, this is the most together and complete version of the 49ers that I can remember in recent history. And I mean, that's why they're favored in every single game this season. This is why they're among the short shots with the Kansas City Chiefs to win a Super Bowl this year, is because they have everything they need to get there. But when you have stuff like this going on, I do worry how much of that might translate onto the field, especially early on in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they got to get locked in. There's no question. You got to get locked into the beginning of the season. But they are good. I mean, there's very few weaknesses on this team when you go through it. You know, I thought today I was working on some things about them, and I thought, they weren't as good at pressure in the passer last year as they were 2 years ago. And that's not true. They're about the same. You know, now I think where they can get better is on third down, and I do think they'll find a way to make a difference in that area. But this is a really well-rounded team that has to avoid injury. And look, I think Brock Purdy can improve. If you look at Brock Purdy's numbers from 2 years ago when he started those six or seven games that he came in to when he started all 16 games last year, when he missed one game, I think to me he shows that he could improve. His accuracy, he can improve, and his timing can improve. And it's just not all play action pass. I mean, that to me is where there's a huge upside to Brock Purdy that we haven't even experienced.
Well, and to that point, there were so many people trying to criticize Brock Purdy that, he's only having success because of all of the weapons around him. All he has to do is get the ball in his playmaker's hands and then they'll take off from there. But let's not forget, he also is one of the top players in the National Football League in air yards per attempt, which is he was pushing the ball downfield, and he's going to continue to do that here. Now, okay, we talk about the distractions that bother me in San Francisco, but another team that is more distractions each and every day, they're on our television screens every day, is the New York Jets. And Aaron Rodgers hit the podium yesterday after getting things started with Jets camp, addressing his mandatory mini camp absence. And apparently, things are going great out there in Jets country. Take a listen.
Obviously, more of an issue outside the building than it was inside the building. Robert and I are great. We had great conversations throughout the offseason. Had a fun one last night in his office till later on. So, it is what it is. I'm an adult. I knew what I was getting into. I knew the fine that was coming, and also knew how much I wanted to be in Egypt. I wish there hadn't been a conflict scheduling-wise, but, was what it was.
What do you think?
It is what it is. I mean, I think, to me, the Jets made it out to something bigger than it was, right? The guy showed up at every OTA day. There had to be a deal. Look, I'm going to show up at every OTA day. But I got this thing in Egypt that I've got to go to. And, you know, maybe Salah said, look, I'm going to have to find you something because you're not here, but go ahead and do it. And you can keep it quiet. He could have had excused absence. I mean, there's a thousand ways to handle it, but I'm just not sure that the Jets always take the path of handling things the right way, i.e. Hassan Riddick. I mean, now people say, well, he made a deal with the Jets, but he reneged on it. No, you don't have a deal with any player until they sign the contract. Hell, we had Rodney Harrison sitting in the Hall of Fame room in Oakland and Alameda, ready to sign a contract. I mean, he was, 6 inches away from putting a pen to paper at the Raiders, and the Patriots were able to get him out of the room and get him to there. We had an agreement with Steve Feldman, his agent. We had a complete agreement, and he left. He left the room because he never signed the contract. So I don't want to hear, well, they had an agreement. I've had an agreement. The guy should be in the Hall of Fame. We had an agreement with him, and it didn't work.
I think with both the Aaron Rodgers and the Hassan Reddick stuff, this is a Robert Saleh and a leadership issue up top with the Jets, the way that they're handling a lot of these things. And listen, it's Super Bowl or bust.
All the time.
It's Super Bowl or bust feeling for this team, which I know sounds crazy to think coming off of a 7-win season, but that's how it is. And that's a complicated place to be for a team that we know is so talented. We know what the defense is, but there are a lot of ifs, as we have addressed a lot on this team. Win total for the New York Jets sitting at 9.5. And high expectations for them in the AFC East as well. Tua Tagovailoa, Michael, apparently is skipping practice today completely, according to CBS's Jonathan Jones. Yesterday, Tua did some individual and 7-on-7 work. He did just 2 team snaps. Yeah. Both were handoffs. And then today didn't practice at all. So maybe the hold-in is shifting a little bit amid his contract negotiation.
Maybe he knows. Well, his agent and Jordan Love's agent are the same firm. I don't know if they're represented by the same person, but it's the same firm. So, you know, maybe he knows what the Love deal is, and he's nowhere near that deal. And so he's going to have to leave. But to me, this is another example of a lack of leadership by Miami. You wonder why they're 4-10 over the last 7 games, the last 2 seasons. I mean, at some point, either you're in or you're out. Right. I mean, the Packers have said they're going to get this thing done within a matter of days. I believe that. But the Tua deal isn't close to getting done. And Jeff Darlington said on Pat McAfee the other day, it may go into the next offseason. And if that's the case, you're either in or you're out. You can't have it both ways. Like, you're going to practice one day, then not practice. Like, who's in charge down there? Who's running the team?
Yeah.
You know, we know who's running the team, the players, because they all complained about Vic Fangio last year, about them being too hard on him. So we know there's a sense of a lack of leadership, but that's what you get with Mike McDaniel. Mike McDaniel's not going to confront anybody. Mike McDaniel's a play caller. He's going to, you know, he's playing Madden. He's really good at doing it, but that, and he's great for the media. But in terms of demanding and keeping a championship team like Andy Reid's done, no, I'm not seeing that.
More questions than answers right now with this Miami team, specifically, obviously, here when it comes to the quarterback situation and his contract. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we're going to continue going through Michael's biggest questions for each and every team in the NFC. You won't want to miss it. Don't go anywhere. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The VSiN NFL Betting Guide is out now, and our all-new college football guide drops August 1st. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus, of course, best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for our early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires July 31st, so don't wait. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe today to sign up. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Still to come this hour on the Lombardi Line, VSiN's Mike Somich will join the show in about 15 minutes. He'll be a contributor in that college football betting guide. We're going to talk some big picture NFL with him. He's also got some Major League Baseball plays. And at the end of the hour, a storm warning, a couple topics and questions that are firing me up this offseason. And in hour two, VSiN's own, as well as Circa VP of Operations, Mike Palm, will join us for the final half hour of the program today, which is always fun on Thursday. But where we're going to go here, Michael, is back to the writing spotlight. You've got a column up right now at VSiN.com diving into your biggest questions surrounding each team in the NFC. And this is fun because usually it's me asking you my burning questions about each team. But from your perspective and the way that you're breaking down each one of these teams, I love hearing the marquee things that are most important for you and questions that need answers. Answers for a lot of these teams in training camp. So let's start with the Arizona Cardinals in the NFC West. What's your biggest question for them?
They got to find a passing game, right? They ran the football effectively against a lot of teams. But what you've noticed over the last couple seasons, Stormy, with Kyler Murray is people have figured out how to rush him. And people have figured out to force him to stay in the pocket. And last year, he averaged 6.1 yards per attempt. He averaged 6.7 the year before. And so the ball needs to get down the field. He's thrown 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. And so for him, he's got to be able to make throws down the field. And if he's in the pocket, which his size becomes prohibitive, and if he's not able to move and run away from people and make plays outside the pocket like he did the first couple of years, then all of a sudden he's not as effective. So for me, this is the key for the Cardinals. Now they've got Marvin Harrison Jr., which should help their passing game a little bit. Last year, Hollywood Brown wasn't the guy. It's interesting. Hollywood Brown didn't help him, but he's now going to help Kansas City. I love how that always works out. So I think to me, that's the question. Kyler Murray has to earn his paycheck. I mean, he's going to have to show he can throw it up the field.
Yeah, and to follow that up, Cardinals wide receivers last year on passes with 20-plus air yards, they ranked 30th in receptions, 30th in receiving yards, and tied for 26th in receiving touchdowns, despite just having two of those long field scoring plays. Very, very interesting. Great point, Michael. Let's keep it in the division with the San Francisco 49ers, who, yes, we talked about a lot in the A block because of the hold-ins and holdouts with Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams, but there are other questions on field about the San Francisco 49ers team that you have.
Well, the number one thing is it's remarkable when they play a clean game, when they don't lose, they're hard to beat, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that we always would talk about in New England is you have to avoid losing before you can win, which it sounds cliche-ish, but it's harder to do than you would think. And the Niners, when they don't commit a turnover, they were 9-0 in those games. When they commit in three games, they committed three or more. They were 0-3. So as good as they are, if they protect the football, you're not going to beat them. But if they give you an opportunity to take the ball away, like they did in the Cleveland game, like they did in the Minnesota game, they're beatable. But I think Kyle Shanahan knows that. What's fascinating about the 49ers is they are the best team in the league. And this is an important stat for me to look at. I always say this. You want to be a great third down team? Stay out of third down. You want to be a great third down defense? Stay out of third down, right? And so the Niners have had the least amount of third down attempts of any NFL team last year. That stat tells you a lot about the production on first and second down. And I think that's why they're so effective. But they protect the football. They're unbeatable.
Yeah, you said when they protect the football, they win. And it's interesting, too, because you look at the handful of games where Brock Purdy did turn the ball over. And outside of the Ravens game, which was just abysmal, and all of his MVP hopes crashed and burned after that game on Christmas. He got a lump of coal on Christmas Day, I can tell you that. But the other games, it was like concussion issues, right? And he was dealing with some stuff in those games, too. So I wonder if we're able to reel that in with Brock Purdy healthy throughout the course of the season. He has a good connection with his teammates. And dial that in, they'll win games. Seattle is another team we haven't had a chance to talk a ton about in terms of your questions. I know there are things you like a lot about this team, most notably the addition of their new head coach and Mike McDonald and what he can do to turn around that defense. But what's your big question with Seattle?
Well, obviously it starts with their defense. You know, they're 24-17, Stormy, over the last 5 years at home. Now, you would never guess that based on that field, based on the noise, based on the weather, based on the environment, all those things. But they haven't been able to play very good up front. And I think that's the big issue. And so Mike McDonald comes in and he's going to have to fix a defense that was 30th in the league on third down, 23rd in the red zone. Their numbers in every single category were bad. From run defense to pass defense, and yet they still won 9 games. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they just improve the offensive side of the defensive side of the ball, and Lucas, their right tackle, plays more than the 6 games he played in last year, and they get this offensive line configured correctly with that running back, Kenneth Walker, they're going to be a really good team. Randy Mueller said yesterday he thinks they've underachieved, and I agree. They have talent. And I think McDonald's going to get it out of them. I really do. And the more I keep digging, it's remarkable that Pete won 9 games with this team last year. You know, and I think because of his ability to do that, if he beats Pittsburgh a game week 17 in Seattle. But they gave up 400 yards to Pittsburgh, 200 on the ground, 200 in the air.
I'll follow up some of your stats with some more here that I have found from ESPN Sports and Information Group. Points per game, 25th. Yards per game, 30th. First downs per game, 32nd. Third down conversion percentage, 30th. The list goes on and on about how poor this defense ultimately performed last year. And then you look conversely at what Mike McDonald did lead in the Ravens defense a year ago. They were the first team in NFL history to allow the fewest points, most sacks, and record the most takeaways in the same season. His defense last year had a defensive EPA of 112.8, the highest by any team since the New England Patriots in 2019. So if he can bring just a sliver of that to Seattle, you imagine the leap forward that they can take. How about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? They go on to win the division yet again last year, despite all of the doubt moving on from Tom Brady. Baker Mayfield steps in. He gets a new deal done. Mike Evans is back. As you look at this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, who I'm sure would like to get back on top of the NFC South again, but everyone is doubting them. Not a single one of our VSiN analysts or experts in this year's NFL betting guide picked the Bucs to win the division. What's your question about them?
Well, I mean, they've won the division in the last 2 years, and they have had no running game. They're 31st and 32nd in running the football the last two seasons. You know how hard that is with Baker Mayfield as your quarterback? They finished 31st and 32nd. The longest run of the year last year was 38 yards. 2 years ago, it was 35. That's somewhat remarkable that they've been able to do that. And then factor in, here's an interesting nugget too. In the red zone, they were one of the worst. They were 30th in the NFL in red zone production last year. In 10 games, they scored under 21 points, and they were 3-7 in those 10 games. If they get anything in the run game, improve some of their red zone, they won the division last year. And Todd Bowles has said, and we'll talk about this later in the second hour, this is the fastest defense he's ever been a part of with Tampa Bay. And that defense at the end of the year was playing well.
Okay, good stuff. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers win total, just 7.5. They were 9-8 this past year, 8-9 the year before. It's keep winning the division somehow, some way. Division odds this year, +320. Last one here, final minute and a half. How about the Washington Commanders bring in their young rookie quarterback as the number 2 overall pick, Jaden Daniels out of LSU. People very excited about the potential for him, but you still have questions as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what to expect from him as a rookie. And here's why. I think he's really talented, and I think he's got a lot of skill. Is their offensive line going to be good enough? It wasn't last year. They still didn't really make very many improvements to the offensive line. They've got skilled players. Can they run the football? I don't know. But here's where I get to Daniels. He loved to run the ball. Gained 1,000 yards on the ground at LSU. He's going to be a one-look-and-run guy, at least for the first part of his NFL career. If that happens, can he stay healthy? Is he going to be able to withstand the pounding that he's going to get? That line, they did really nothing to protect that line. And they signed Andrew Wiley, and he's going to play right tackle. I mean, that's going to be good enough. It wasn't good enough for the Chiefs. Why is he going to be good enough for Washington? Cornelius Lucas at the left tackle, that doesn't make much sense to me. I think that wasn't good for the Bears. You think it's going to be good for the Washington team? So I worry about this line, and I worry about putting a young quarterback behind it. And like I've said to you before, you know, if they're not going to go with him, you couldn't put Mariota behind this line because Mariota is going to get hurt.
No question about it. They were a bottom three unit in the NFL last season. Their quarterback was getting pummeled. The season win total for Washington this year, 6.5. They're an 8-1 shot in a division that is of the haves and the have-nots, with the Cowboys and Eagles at the top and the Washington Commanders and Giants clearly there at the bottom. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, VSiN Zone, Mike Somich is going to stop by the show on the Progressive guest line. Keep the NFL talk rolling. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL is back, and it feels so good. All 32 teams around the league in training camp. Everybody is around, although I use that term loosely because some players maybe are not around specifically, but we'll save that talk for another day. I am so excited for who is around to join us here on the Lombardi Line. Mike Somich joins us on the Progressive guest line, host of The Handle on VSiN and DraftKings Network every Saturday and Sunday, beginning at 9 Pacific, noon Eastern. You can follow him on X as well, at SamaBomb18. And Mike, how are you feeling knowing that we are that much closer to real games on our television?
Oh, I can't wait. It's training camp when it opens is just so phenomenal. It's hard to keep up with all of the storylines and everything that everyone's talking about. And then you just got to love, you see these passes from Sam Darnold, from Justin Fields hitting bombs of 50 plus yards. You're like, well, like, oh, do we really want to buy into this again? But you kind of do want to buy into it because it's so exciting having the season coming up so soon.
Mike, I don't know if you play Survivor, but I know you are aware of Survivor. Week one looks so easy to take New England and figure since he's going to romp to it. But Zach Taylor's 0-4 the last 2 years in opening games. That's with Joe Burrow under center. Do you think, is that something you would look at even with those numbers?
Look, Michael, I am a Survivor player. I am planning on just buying one entry and fading the Patriots every single week in that entry for as long as I can go, because this is going to be, in my mind, historically bad New England team up there. And I do think that you're going to see a different Bengals. Now, you got to get through training camp with Joe Burrow. That's been an issue the last couple years. But if you have a healthy Joe Burrow who's 100% under center, you got to think the talk in Cincinnati is we have to get out to a hot start just because of how the last couple seasons went. So, yeah, I do think that is a very safe play in Survivor. It's also going to be a very popular play in Survivor. So there's going to be some people who want to go contrarian against it. And if that's the case, and for some way that the Cincinnati Bengals lose, you're going to see half the field out of Survivor week one.
Well, and Joe Burrow clearly needs to get back out there on the field because he said he's been bored this offseason, which is what led to the bleached buzz cut. So let's get some football going with Joe Burrow. But okay, so that's an AFC team that you are interested in fading in the New England Patriots. Michael has an article up on VSiN.com right now going through his biggest questions for each NFC team. As a better and handicapper, is there an NFC team that you've got some questions about that either held you off of a bet or said, I think I want to fade this team this year?
There's three of them that jump out to me, but two of them in particular I think are good fades. And the first one is the Chicago Bears. And a lot of this is just because of the market and how much it's run. Their win total sitting at 8.5 right now, juiced heavily toward the over. And I look it up and down that schedule. They've got legitimately two wins on it, right? They got the Panthers and they've got the Patriots at home. After that, they're in a ton of coin flip games. And people say, well, what about the game, week one game against the Titans? You got a rookie quarterback starting week one. I'm not like circling that and giving you the W right out of the gate. You've got a tough division, two games against the Lions, two games against the Packers and the Vikings. So I think you're going to be frisky. And even your easy games on the rest of the schedule are on the road. You got to go to Washington. You've got to go to Arizona. To me, this Bears team, especially with the juice toward the over, is a team I want to look toward the under. And the other one is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this was supposed to be one of the worst teams in the NFL last year. What's changed? Nothing. Baker got good all of a sudden and they were healthy last year. But the narrative around this team heading into last year was they're old. They're going to get hurt at some point and you're going to want to fade them. Guess what? They're still old. They're probably still going to get hurt at some point. Everything ran perfectly for them last year. And now we're sitting at a 7.5 win total juice to the over. I just can't make that big of adjustment from what I thought last year of this team into this year. On top of that, you lost Dave Canales. And we'll see how much that hurts them. But we saw what happened to Seattle's offense with and without him. You got to think there's going to be some regression there as well. So for me, those two teams are the easy ones. And unfortunately, Stormy, the other one's the 49ers.
How dare you?
You knew it was coming. That offensive line's not very good. And Trent Williams is now holding out. There's issues with Ayuk, which I don't think are going to go away. I think the defensive line is worse to me. And the division got better. Like, I'll take all three of those teams as improving. And you've got San Francisco, who's played a lot of football over the last 2 years, that just doesn't have a good offensive line. It's really Trent Williams and nothing. So they're the least of the fades. Like, I think they're still a top four team in the NFC. The other two teams, I think, are grossly mispriced at this point.
Boo. Michael,
well, I mean,
go.
If you don't, I know. I don't agree, but that's okay. That's why we have it. We'd love to have different opinion. Yeah. Let me ask you this question about Tampa Bay. You don't like them to win the South. Who do you like to win the South?
I think Atlanta is the correct favorite. I think with what they have on offense specifically, their defense is not great, and that's going to be an issue for them. But on offense specifically, I do think they take a step forward. The big issues were Ridder last year. Outside of that, the rest of the offense performed pretty well and was really misused in my mind in a lot of cases. I think they'll be properly used with Pitts and with Bijan Robinson this year. You get an upgraded quarterback, which obviously is huge there. The problem for me is just like, I don't trust the Saints at all. I do think the Panthers are going to be better than what they were last year, but they're still not good enough to win the division. However, the price on the Falcons has kind of gotten away as well. So I bet them plus 130 to win the AFC South. That was before free agency. That was a time to bet the Falcons. Now at minus 120, it's hard to get overly excited about that price. But to me, this division's wide open if the Falcons don't play well, because it could be anybody. Like, Carolina could win this division if the Falcons end up being bad. And we'll see what happens there. But I do think the Falcons are the correct favorite right now in the South.
Yeah, the lowest win percentage by a division winner in the NFC South each of the last 2 years. Falcons minus 120, Bucks plus 320, Saints plus 340, and the Carolina Panthers 11-1. Okay, Mike, there's been a lot of news about potential quarterback deals. We're talking about Jordan Love, Tua Tagovailoa. And with Jordan Love specifically, the report from Adam Schefter is they anticipate by the end of the week, Love could be the highest paid player in the National Football League. We obviously, as bettors, could care less about what a contract is and what a guy's getting paid. It's all about what the product is going to be on the field. what's your perception of Jordan Love based on what you saw from him last season?
Well, I was a Jordan Love guy going into the season last year, and it was a little frustrating early, but it was really validating late because I do think he played absolutely phenomenally. And when it comes to contracts, like, look, should he be the highest paid player in the NFL? No, but he's signing his contract right now. And I think everyone has to kind of take a look at when the contract was signed, right? You're going to see probably Tua get Burrow money. You're going to see Love get Burrow type money. Is Burrow better? Yeah, of course he's better in a vacuum. But you know what? Burrow's going to get paid more in a couple of years than both these guys, right? It's all about when you sign the contract and what the value of that contract is toward the end of it. It looks like they're overpaid early in the contract. But if Jordan Love's a top five quarterback in 4 years, he's going to be underpaid at that point. So contract wise, I think you're going to get those money. And what's the other option? If you don't pay Tua, if you don't pay Love, what are you going to do? Because you've got good position players around him. You kind of have to give them the bag so that you're able to try and compete for a playoff and possibly Super Bowl.
All right. So are you in on Miami or out on Miami with Tua once you pay him Burrow like money?
I'm in on the offense, Michael. I'm got questions on this defensive side of the ball, though. You've got Chubbs and Phillip both coming back from major injuries, ACL and Achilles, respectively. You lost Wilkins on the inside. You lost Howard on the outside. It's going to be interesting to see how this defense clicks and what to expect from them, specifically early in the season. I think later in the season, they're going to get better and better as Chubb and Phillips both get more healthy. But this offense, I think, is going to absolutely roll. I love Odell Beckham Jr. joining Miami. One of the big struggles for them was what to do on those third and five type situations. They didn't really have a tight end to go to. Well, with Odell Beckham Jr., you've got a guy who can run a slant route, who can run an out route, who can get open on those short routes. And Tua will find him in rhythm if you are able to do that. So I think he's a big addition here for this Miami offense. So I love the offense. I think the defense is going to be better by the end of the season, but the last stretch of the schedule for Miami is awfully tough as well. I still think they're probably, well, to me, they're the most known quantity right now in the AFC East. I'm not sure what to expect from the Jets. I think the defense can be very good, but you've got Rodgers coming back from injury. I'm down on Buffalo a lot because of their defense on top of the issues they have in the wide receiver room. So I think Miami is the best known quantity. I bet them to win the division at 2-1, but it's not one of my bigger bets that I have out there.
Yeah, 2-1 for them in the division, -155 to make the playoffs. Season win total for Miami, 9.5. Okay, last couple of minutes here, Mike. Give us our 2 minutes of baseball. What are you looking at on the Major League Baseball slate?
We got to squeeze it in, right? I got three plays today from the diamond here. First, we're going to take the Tampa Bay Devil Rays here, or the Rays, I should say. Taj Bradley on the hill for him. He's been phenomenal for them. He's got a 2.63 ERA, and the underlying numbers support it. Taking on a Toronto team, I'm just looking to fade in toward the deadline. We'll see if they end up moving anybody. Vlad and Bichette both been rumored. I don't think anyone ends up moving, but still not a great situation for Toronto every day they go to the ballpark. So let's take the Blue Jays here, -110. Like the Braves, -110 as well. You've got Chris Sale on the mound. He's been phenomenal for them. Severino on the mound for the Mets. The Mets have been playing good baseball, but it feels like Chris Sale is just a stopper for this Braves team. Willing to lay the -110. I thought they should be a little bigger favorite today. And finally, let's look to the Athletics. One of the best offenses in baseball. Who saw that coming, right? Their total right now for the team total for today is 4.5. Let's take the over on the 4.5. They've gone over this total in 7 of the last 9 games, and they went over it all 3 games against the Angels, who they faced 4, 5, and 6 back. You've got Rosenberg on the mound, not very good, and you've got a bad bullpen there for the Angels as well. You also have the Athletics at home or on the road, so you get that top of the ninth no matter what, even if they're winning. So Athletics over 4.5 team total as well for me today.
You're a stud, despite your thoughts on the 49ers. Still love you, man. Thanks for doing this.
They'll still be good. I just think it's the best team in the NFC.
Yeah. Mike Savage, everybody. No, great stuff from him as always. Make sure you check him and Matt Brown out every weekend on The Handle here on VSiN as well as DraftKings Network. We're going to hit the break when we come back. It's time for a little storm warning. I'll give you guys my opinion on the Jordan Love contract situation. I have some more feelings about the Jets, which I'm sure people are excited, and a little college football talk. Don't go anywhere. The Lombardi Line will be back after a quick timeout.
Yeah. This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of the betting tools and content at VSiN.com. Each and every day, best bets from all of our show hosts, guests, and analysts available at your convenience. Updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including regular columns from our own Michael Lombardi. And of course, the guides, our NFL betting guide out now, the college football betting guide, remember, dropping a week from today, next Thursday, August 1st. If you haven't already, make sure you head out to VSiN.com.
I love it. I love the music intro, too. I love it. It's so good. It's almost Springsteenish. All right.
Every time
so let's
I hear that music, Michael, I'm like,
topic.
What did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? No, it's good.
No, we want to hear it. Look, we want to hear it. All right. So we know the Packers are in love with Love, and we're expecting a huge deal to come down very shortly. But there is a little bit of a warning that you have for the Green Bay Packers. Please share.
So here's the thing, Michael, and I love that we had a little bit of this discussion about the Jordan Love contract last segment with Mike Somich. For me, I just feel like Jordan Love should not be getting Joe Burrow money. And quite frankly, neither should Trevor Lawrence, who did. Neither should Tua. But as the great philosopher Tua Tagovailoa once said, the market is the market. It's going to happen. So nothing that I say here matters. Let it be known, me saying Jordan Love doesn't deserve Joe Burrow money is not hate. I was a big fan of his coming out of Utah State. He was put in a tough situation, drafted in the first round to a team with a quarterback who wanted weapons, not a replacement. He sat, learned, and now he's getting his opportunity. Had a great attitude the whole way. And he's very talented, of course. But I cannot get away from the Jekyll and Hyde of the sample size we have from him in 18 starts. So let's go through this real quickly, because he's getting paid off of essentially 8 to 10 games where he was awesome. He closed the season on a 7-3 run, 21 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 68.7 completion percentage, a 108.2 QBR. Ended up with the second most touchdowns in the entire league thanks to the way he finished the season. Also beat the Cowboys in the playoffs in what was a statement win with all eyes across the country on him. Now, that sample size to me is not fully reflective of who he is as a player. Neither is this. So let's go through the first half of the season. When they were 3-6 and lost to teams like the Raiders, Broncos, and Falcons, he had 4 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. So I'm not saying that's the player he is. I'm not saying the back end of the season is the player he is. But ownership is going to have to pay him based on who he was the last 10 weeks. And I don't think that's fair. Would it be awesome if the Packers front office found the next quarterback in line from Brett Favre, who had 3 MVPs, multiple MVPs, from Aaron Rodgers, who had 4, to now be this next guy that they have for a decade plus, and they win a Super Bowl and they do all these things? Absolutely. That would be unbelievable. But we don't know who Jordan Love is. So why does he get paid as if he's already done those things?
Great commentary. But let me ask one more thing to you. If Jordan Love would have had the second 8 games first and the last 8 games second, do you think he gets this contract?
No, I think people would have forgotten about it. But because he ended the season performing in the playoffs the way that he did and had that ridiculous run without an interception, I think that the view is recency bias and that he's going to cash in because of it. And good for him. You know, I'm not hating on him. Do your thing.
Yeah.
I just don't think it makes sense.
Yeah, no question. I agree. All right. The Jets, we know they have high expectations this season. If they also have high hopes last year, are you sure we're not going down the same road again, that nothing has changed in New York?
Yeah, Michael, I know I've said my piece on this team ad nauseum, but the Jets are selling us the same bill of goods. It's crazy right now. It's like they're kind of a used car salesman trying to sell us the same old clunker with a new paint job. And my dad loved his Suburban when he was a kid. Had a VCR, had a TV in it, leather seats, but it was a lemon. It broke down every 2 months. And that's kind of how I view the Jets. Earlier this hour, we played you some sound from Aaron Rodgers on this team's expectations. Let's play that again, along with a Robert Saleh soundbite from last offseason that might ring a bell.
Every single year there's 8 to 12 teams, maybe, probably less, but 8 to 12 teams that could actually do it. And we're one of those 8 to 12.
32 coaches stand in front of their teams every year, talk about winning a championship, and then realistically there's maybe 6 or 8 teams that have an actual chance to do it. And I do think we are one of those teams.
Am I in the freaking Twilight Zone, Michael? Is this it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And how many wins did they have last year? Seven. And I know Aaron Rodgers only played 4 snaps. Offensive line was injured all the time. I get it. But this is, and again, I'll say too, like there are teams that have done it, right? I think about the New England Patriots who had 5 wins and then went on to win the Super Bowl a year later. It can happen. But talk is so cheap. And with this team, it's always talk. I am sick. I am tired. I am sick and tired of the talking from the Jets and Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh. Let's just get on the field and do something. No?
No question. All right, let's shift to college football. I can't wait to hear you on this one. Lincoln Riley, third year at USC, got paid a ton of money, has an $18 million home that looks out over the cliffs of the Pacific Ocean. You know, he's everything that they want, and tried to get LSU to not play him this year, said the schedule was too tough already. But LSU said, no, 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 we want you. Why are you skeptical about this SC program coming back and being the juggernaut it once was?
So you're actually going to laugh at me here, Michael, because while I am not a buyer at all on the Jets, something about what's going on at USC might actually be pulling me in this year. But they're another team that needs to prove it, especially defensively. And this is a group that obviously loses Caleb Williams and is going to have to rebuild from that standpoint. But Miller Moss, while not as flashy and talented as Caleb, many believe actually might fit better in Lincoln Riley's system. But what he hasn't done is win anything of significance in the postseason. 2-4 in bowl games as a head coach, 0-3 in the college football playoff. Why is that? Defense is trash. That's why the USC's win total is 7. But I'm actually looking at this from a point of optimism. They bring in Danton Lynn, who we talked about earlier this week as defensive coordinator, who to me could be the missing piece here. Spent 9 years in the NFL. And in addition to bringing a culture and mindset to UCLA last year, also brought significant change on the field. They go defensively from 87th to 11th. They went from 111th in expected points allowed per game to 8th, and also finished the season 8th nationally, allowing just 4.5 yards per play. USC's defenses the last 2 years ranked 106th and 119th. Similar to what we were talking about Mike McDonald with the Seattle Seahawks, I think Danton Lynn could bring that type of change despite the talent that's on that side of the ball. They also bring in Matt Entz from the FCS powerhouse North Dakota State, won 2 national championships with them as a head coach and another 4 as a defensive coordinator. He's linebackers coach and assistant to the head coach. I think he will be another piece that will make a significant difference on that defense. And maybe I'm crazy, but I'm looking at the schedule. They didn't want to play LSU, but they do. And if they win that game, it could set the tone for a really strong season for this team, who avoids Ohio State and Oregon in the conference this year. I like their win total over 7. There's an alt over 8 wins at plus 350. And maybe, just maybe, this defense could be, and I'm not saying they need to be like a top 10 defense, but if we get top 60, they're winning some games.
No question. All right, you mentioned Oregon. Oregon's been known for high-flying offense since Chip Kelly was there, and they've lived up to that building with Bo Nix moving it up and down the field. How do you think this squad will compare with Dylan Gabriel under center?
I think Oregon's offense could be even better than it was last year, Michael. And I'm not just saying that because they added a marquee analyst and Matt Lombardi to the fold, okay? This is legit. I think this offense is going to be ridiculous. Will Stein comes back for his second year as offensive coordinator. Bo Nix is in the NFL, but they're set up at the quarterback position for the present and the future. Dylan Gabriel is a Heisman Trophy favorite right now. Dante Moore from UCLA was ESPN's number 2 overall recruit in 2023 behind him. Every position that they had a hole on, they filled and made better. They lose Troy Franklin as a wide receiver, bring in a highly touted 5-star transfer out of Texas A&M, Evan Stewart, to play aside alongside Tez Johnson, who had over 1,000 yards last year and 10 touchdowns. He's looking to break all those records that Franklin set a year ago. They lose their Remington Trophy Award winner at center, but are loaded with NFL caliber talent up front. Top 5 O-line they're going to have with 3 returning starters and both tackles. They're going to have a top 10 running back unit, might have the best wide receiver unit in the country. And not that all of this is a secret, but I think Oregon is a team that not only is going to contend for a Big Ten title, but a national title. This team is the real deal, and they have all of the resources at their disposal.
All right, since Mike knocked the Niners, you believe that we talked to Kyle Shanahan about being shocked Belichick doesn't have a head coaching job, but you still think he'll win a ring this year. Tell me how.
Okay, a little bit of a different thing. Obviously, we played the sound yesterday from Kyle Shanahan about bringing in Bill Belichick. My warning is to Bill. He could have gotten another ring had he come. Like, oh, Michael, imagine what could have been. Imagine what could have been if Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator for the 49ers. We thought their defense was soft last year. You know who would harden them up? You know who would give them the culture and the words that they need? It's this guy. I am heartbroken. I wish I never would have heard that from Kyle yesterday. Keep that to yourself. I didn't know what potentially could have been. You had the conversation. Bill said no. I wanted to help him get another ring to the case, Michael. He could have had one.
He could have, you know, but he's probably going to try to get another one for sure. You're right about that. But I love the fact that Kyle asked. Isn't that great?
Yes. And I think more coaches should have. We'll be right back.